Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am really honored and truly excited to share the microphone with the most interesting business leaders. These are people who have wonderful stories to share, and they are excited to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice as we chat for the next 60 minutes. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now, right now, and was also featured recently on MSNBC. So our topic today, how to make the leap from corporate to a creative and wildly successful mindset with my guest, Marie Sutro. Marie Sutro is an executive leader with over 24 years of experience in commercial real estate. She has worked for some of the leading global management firms as well as top national developers. And possessing a wealth of technical knowledge, she has achieved continued success through innovation, mentoring, and exceptional customer service. But in January 2017, just recently, she branched out into the art world with the release of her highly praised debut novel, I can do this, Marie, I can, Dark Associations, which, by the way, I have a copy of. It's a great book, and I've already promised to share it with my sister in California as soon as I'm done with it. She's going to be traveling across the United States. So to give you a bit of background about this kind of creative leap, her father, grandfather, and great-grandfather all served in the San Francisco Police Department, collectively inspiring this story, this new book that she wrote. She is a native of the San Francisco Bay Area and a member of Sisters in Crime. You can find them online, Sisters in Crime, it's either .com or .org. The link is in the show notes. She is a proponent of adult literacy, and she volunteers with California Library Literacy Services, helping adults improve their reading and their writing skills. In this episode of your Partner in Success Radio, we are going to discuss how much goal setting influences your success, how much of your success is determined by you rather than others or outside influences, addressing setbacks, and passion as a factor in your success. Marie, good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so excited to have you here.
Good morning, Denise, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's exciting. Your publicist, I don't know if it was your publicist or the publishing company, somebody sent me your book. And I went, well, I'll be darned. And I love to read. I'm a voracious reader. It's not uncommon for me on a weekend if I just say I'm not doing anything else but reading to read five or six books in a day. So a book, any kind of book, is welcome to me. And this one, I love murder mysteries. I always have. You know, so this one's like, this is right in my wheelhouse. But we're going to be talking about the book, but mostly we're going to be talking about how you started out, how you got where you are now, and what kind of made you take that leap from a corporate mindset, which is, you know, you have to have a creative mind to be in corporate, I think, but then to going out into kind of the art world. So I think it's going to be a fascinating story. But let's start. Is there anything that I may have missed in the introduction that you'd like to share?
No, Denise, just a little bit of kind of color commentary for how the journey starts. When I was in college, I was in an honors literature class, and a gal came up to me. You know, I had just, you know, I was working my way through college, and I had one of those, you know, those little part-time retail jobs that a lot of us do working our way through college. And she came up to me after class one day, and she said, you know, you're really smart, and, you know, we have a lot in common. She said, I work for a mortgage company. Would you like to, you know, are you interested in potentially interviewing with them? And I said, well, yeah, I'd love to get out of, you know, some of these retail things that I'm doing now. That would be great. And so I kind of left that literature world and stepped into the business world, and it happened to be mortgage, you know, the finance arm of real estate, where I ended up making an entire career. So now I'm back in the literary world. So it's kind of a fun process that came full circle many years later.
Isn't that kind of the way it goes, though? I mean, we all have these hopes and dreams when we're younger and we're in school, we're in college, and we're going to be an astronaut. Or in my case, I was going to be an Egyptologist. Never mind, I can't be outside for more than 5 minutes without blistering, and I do not want sand under my fingernails, but I was going to be an archaeologist. That was all there was to it. And then reality kind of steps in, and you know, you kind of have to make a living. So it sounds like that's the path you took.
Absolutely, and you find that, you know, I'm a big believer that no one's really just a one-dimensional being. And we can find a variety of different things that we're passionate about. So for me, when I did step into that finance arm of real estate, I realized I really enjoyed it. And hence a career, an entire career in corporate real estate.
Now, are you still doing this?
I do not do it ever since the book came out. It's become kind of a full-time passion, just talking with wonderful folks like you, doing book signings, and, you know, I've got some other books in the queue as well, so it's become a full-time passion now.
Well, good for you. So how did you come to it? I guess my big question here is the mindset. And I agree with you 100%. We're not single-dimensional people. We can find all kinds of things to do. It's not like, you know, a couple of decades ago, two or three or four decades ago, when you got a job at the railroad or AT&T and you stayed there till you got your gold watch, and that was it. People now are branching out, and they're kind of following their own passions. They're doing multiple things all at the same time, which I think is very, very exciting. But I guess my question is, how did you kind of make that mental leap from, okay, I've got this great job, a great career, I'm well paid for it, you know, I earned everything I have, I earned, and I'm very proud of that. Now I'm going to go out on this big old shaky limb. How did that work out? I mean, what was the mindset process that you went through? Because I know that had to have been terrifying. Or did you just go, I'm ready, I'm doing this, I don't have any fears? How did it work out?
Well, you know what, Denise, I would love to say that I'm that, you know, I was that great, confident person that said, I have no fears. But to be completely transparent to your listeners, and I think that's where we learn the most, right, is when we are vulnerable and transparent. I was scared to death. In fact, that was the reason why, even though I had quite a few of those little signposts in my life, maybe directing me into writing when I was young, I looked at it and I said, oh, gee, what are the odds? And what is this magic thing called talent? And do I have that magic fairy dust sprinkled on me that means I could do it? You know, and part of going the business path was that was a more well-trodden, in my mind, well-trodden path. And I knew, oh, I can get this education and I can get certifications and I can work for these companies and I can learn this. And it just seemed to make sense because I do have, you know, my degree is in business and master's degree in finance. My brain, as much as it's artistic, is also analytical. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, this, I can comprehend this pattern. You know, it was very analogous to what I had done, you know, from kindergarten through college, you know, in terms of how you process and learn information. So it seemed like a much safer course to me and one that was much more achievable. So, you know, but it wasn't without its many, many challenges, you know, and many unique challenges, different things that it would test you on as everyone's career does, and different hurdles to overcome. And I think it was just getting to a point where, having achieved success in one arena, I looked at it and said, well, gee, now in hindsight, looking back, why can't I transfer these same skills that made me successful here into this other arena? Because really, life, different areas of life aren't so very different. you know, as we think they are. And those skills for being successful, whether you want to be successful in weight loss, whether you want to be successful in a long-term relationship, whatever it is, those skills are all transferable to all of these aspects of our lives. So it wasn't necessarily that I had the confidence and said, I'm going to do it today. I just had a little faith in the process I had lived and said, it's time now. Let me try it. And if I do my best and I put in the same amount of effort that I put into this path, I should come out just as well at the end of the day.
See, that is just brilliant. That is a brilliant way of thinking. And I think, I know, a lot of us will just go, oh, man, that's terrifying. I don't want to do that. And not even take the moment to stop and think about all those transferable skills. I mean, eventually they kind of dawn on us. But I think in that mm-hmm. first moment of, okay, I'm going to go write a book, or I'm going to, you know, change careers entirely, whatever it is that you're going to do. And all of a sudden you just, what is it, that flight or fight, you know, kicks in, you're like,
yes.
oh, geez. And I think you're not thinking with your clear, logical brain for a while. Is that what happened to you, that finally you just went, oh, I got this. I have these skills. I've learned these things already. Let's just switch it up a bit.
Yes, and just to be completely, you know, honest and transparent, there were many times, including right before the book came out, where I thought, oh, my goodness, was this a mistake? Everyone who knows me in this arena, and, you know, I've climbed to the top of this one mountain, I'm going to drop down again and have to start all the way up. And what does that mean for how I define myself? And I realized that's part of the greatest journey of our life, is to find another mountain to climb and to feel that vulnerability again and to wonder, can I do it again? You know, it's those moments when you feel the most alive, when you're challenged in those ways.
That's true. I mean, your comfort zone is really not a safe place. A lot of people,
no.
You know, draw the little circle, I'm going to stay right here in this comfort zone. I think you're just waiting to die at that point. I mean, if you really stay in there and you stay in there long enough, oh boy.
And I'm a firm believer, whether it's, you know, any aspect of your life, friendships, whatever it is, you know, when you get into that zone of complacency, that's where you start to fail to evolve. And that's where, to me, you're just ripping pages off the calendar and without really making an impact or deriving any meaning from the time that you're here.
I absolutely agree with you. You know, you don't want to live an unlived life. And challenges
right.
are the things that really kind of tell you who you are. They tell the rest of the world who you are. And challenges can be as big or as small as getting out of bed and making it to work in the morning, or taking a career and going, you know, you've been good to me. Thanks. I'm leaving now. I mean, they can all be fraught with peril, but I think it's how you cope with those challenges every day, every moment, that really makes you the person that you are and moves you forward, you know, puts you in to that zone of genius and in your success area.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So goal setting, I mean, when you decided to kind of transfer these skills, were there any particular goal setting muscles that you found that you were using the most?
Yeah, it really just goes back to those fundamentals that everyone talks about really in the business world, you know, and it's those kind of some of those values that we get that we carry over from the military world, right? Have a clear and achievable goal. Craft a very detailed plan for achieving that goal. Oh, and by the way, monitor your goals, and if you have to, make them available to be amended down the road so that you can adapt and you can be dynamic and still achieve your overall umbrella of success. So, you know, I can't count how many times walking into a completely new industry, I had to use those same skill sets over and over again because, you know, you start out with that idea of, gee, what's your goal? Well, originally my first goal was, can I just write a good book before I even went to the point of selling it? Can I write it? You know, and that was the first goal. And then we kind of went on a rolling series of what it meant to achieve that kind of success of eventually getting published and getting my book in people's hands.
Marie, when you started this process, you know, there's always, I guess, that kind of mindset. There's the goal setting. There's the discipline. I mean, everything mm-hmm. we do requires discipline, whether we recognize it or not. How did you... I work backwards from my goals. I set my goal and then go, okay, these are the steps I'm going to need to take to get to mm-hmm. that goal. I don't stick the goal out there on the wall and go, I'm coming. Hang on, I'm coming.
Yeah.
It's just silly. but, you know, I make little baby steps and I try to really be disciplined about achieving those goals. So is there any advice that you'd like to give our audience about how to create goal setting that actually works, that works with you and works with you in this process of writing this book?
Well, I think, Denise, exactly that idea of, you know, fundamentally taking baby steps, because, you know, all of our goals are so lofty at the end of the day. You know, if we were to just sit in a room with our friends and a glass of wine and say, gee, what do you want to do? Well, I want to be, you know, I want to cure cancer. Or I want to do this or I want to do that. How many of those are achievable in a 70 to 90 year lifespan? Some are, some aren't, and sometimes those are, you know, resource impairments or, you know, a variety of other challenges that can come up. But I think, you know, starting small, first of all, in bite-sized pieces that you can manage, not only is that important from a procedural standpoint so that you can ultimately achieve your larger, lofty goals, but it's also important from a motivation standpoint. And I don't know if it's been your experience as well, but if you set that huge goal out of the gates, then you can quickly lose motivation when different setbacks occur. And you don't want to be thrown off the path.
It only takes me 3 days to get, okay, I'm done. That was too big a bite to chew. I'm done. I have witnessed this to myself say 3 days. At the end of 3 days, my enthusiasm has waned. I'm now seeing the boulders in the way, and I'm like, oh, crap, I've got other things to do. So you're right. You know, you have to make it bite-sized and achievable, and then at the end of the day, go, good girl, pat yourself on the head, start over the next day.
Yes. Yes, and one of the other factors I think is really important, and I think, you know, whether it's in the corporate world or the private investment world, nonprofits, wherever you are, one of the pieces that sometimes doesn't get considered as much, which is that, you know, symbiotic relationships are so important in success. And, you know, you have to look at what is it that other people contribute to the process, and truly seeing the value in other human beings and what they can offer, and not just going out and saying, okay, well, my people are my resources, whether it's a network, whether it's someone who's providing a service, whether it's someone in a support role, but truly seeing those people on complete equal footing and partnership, whatever level their contribution is, they're still one of your partners in achieving that success. So I think that's an important element as well when you're trying to make those goals so clear and achievable, is helping other people understand what your goals are, so that if there are people who want to offer sponsorship or mentorship or motivation, feedback, any of those things that are so pivotal that keep us on track, then, you know, you've really got the opportunity to keep them motivated and keep them on board with you as well, because, you know, you have to own your own failure, but you have to share your successes.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because two of my business partners and I we just invested in a very expensive online course, very expensive and mm-hmm. very intensive. And I spent most of the day in it yesterday poking around going, oh, geez, there's a ton of wonderful information. And my immediate visceral response is, when am I going to find the time to learn this, to do this? And more importantly, Marie, master it. Excuse me. So I came up with the idea, and I sent both of my partners an email last night. I said, look, we're all extremely busy people, and we're all very passionate about doing this. But I can see right now, you know, one's going to do it at her pace, and another one, we're just going to get busy and it's not mm-hmm. going to get done. How about if we create a document that every night we do one thing on the, you know, lesson one, we watch the video, just the video, nothing else. The next day, we download the PDF, and we just go through this in a very measured, very sustainable, very together kind of a way. They're like, oh, yeah, let's do this. A year ago, I have to tell you, that wouldn't occur to me. I would have just powered through it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know better. So, you learn these lessons, but you're right about having these relationships and, keeping yourself accountable and having other people hold you accountable and really putting three brains in one pot, brilliant. I mean, seriously.
Absolutely, and the motivation that comes out of that where, everybody's motivation on a daily basis can, sometimes it's charging out of the gates, other times it's waning, and, to be able to ride that roller coaster where you may be in a lull, but someone else is at the peak, and, they're going to pick you up and say, come on, let's get on and do our hour, or, whatever it is.
Exactly.
That whole human element is very important.
Well, I'm late to that game. I have to tell you, I'm a total introvert. I'm, a highly committed introvert. I need to be alone 98% of the time. And I'm very clear about that. I've created a lifestyle that supports that. But in the past year, two, maybe, probably a little bit longer, I haven't really been paying attention. I've been really mindful about connecting with other people who can help me and I can help them. And we can really, put our brains in a pot. It has been astonishingly eye-opening for me. I don't know what took me so long, but it did.
That's a wonderful, wonderful insight, Denise, because, I'm a big believer that it's the experiences we remember and the relationships that we remember at the end of the day. And sometimes, you look back and, you look back at different points in your career, and you look at things and how much of the time do you actually spend on, some project you were trying to launch or, some new initiative that you had 10 or 15 years ago. But what you will reflect on is the people you worked with and the highs and the lows and, oh, remember when this happened or that happened. And it's not so much what happened as the knowledge that you gained, the value as a person that you gained from interacting with other people during that time. And that's what's one of the greatest things about setting goals and having that time to reflect and look back and say, where am I on the mountain and how did I get here? And when you see how much human capital goes into that, there's just so much reward in that process, I think.
I absolutely agree. A year ago, I wouldn't have, well, maybe 2 years ago, I would have, no, I can do this on my own. I'm a little pig-headed there, but now that I've invited these other amazing, brilliant minds into my life, I just feel like I've got a rocket strapped to my butt. I'm just kidding. It's crazy. Excuse the language, but it's a very different mindset and it's a very different feeling. And I think the emotion, I think that's what is being attached to it, not just that, we're kind of picking each other's brains and supporting each other and we're all heading for, the same kind of goal, different arenas, different, different types of businesses, but we're doing it together. And, if I don't have an answer, one of them has it, I'm in almost instantly, or vice versa. And
right.
There's something very rewarding about having a brain trust, if you will, to just kind of go, hey, we got this. We can do this on our own. So I think what my point is, and I kind of have one maybe, is that at that point, I'm almost avoiding setbacks because of the way we're structuring this.
Absolutely.
And setbacks, I think,
absolutely.
They come to you if you try to do it on your own. You try to power through it. So is that your experience,
right,
that you have to bring other people in at some level to kind of boost you?
It is, and it's something, in the years of mentoring other people in the corporate world, it's something that I always try to impress upon people, because even if you're in that individual contributor role in a company, let's say you're a salesperson, the real estate equivalent of that, we have brokers and, people who are, flying a little bit more individually than some of the folks who are more in, either the corporate environment or the traditional infrastructure roles. And even if you are in one of those individual contributor roles, it's so important to realize that what you do doesn't happen in a vacuum. There's all of these other, even if it's the client on the other end, you know, the corporate graveyard, as it were, is littered with stories of companies who went out and said, well, I want to be the largest provider of XYZ widget in either the country or the world. And they charged ahead and said, this is what we want to do. And they did it in a great way, and they had great policies, and they became very powerful. And they were, you know, you have all this merger and acquisition activity, and you look at whether it's telecom or a variety of other industries where this has happened over the years. And they reach that pinnacle of success. They reach the goal that they set for themselves. But the problem is, in order to do that, sometimes you forget about the human element. And you say, well, gee, what's the cheapest way we can produce this widget? Or what's the fastest time we can get to market, or whatever it is. And, you know, you look at some of the big cable providers, you know, and they realize, oh, gee.
Comcast.
I'm so, yeah. Absolutely. In, you know,
they have the worst reputation.
Now.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And they're trying to reposition. They've gone through, you know, great example of the M&As and all of the rest of it. And now they're in a position running ads saying, oh, no, 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 we will be there and we'll give you a time and we'll actually show up. So, you know, looking at that kind of customer service element, it is so important, because no matter how much sometimes, you know, even as a writer, you can sit in your house, and I tend to be like you too. You know, I'm in my writer zone sometimes, and it's the world according to my brain. And
right, don't answer,
you know,
the door. Don't call me. Everybody,
yes.
Go away.
Right. Exactly. But still, what you're doing is so interdependent on others. If I write a sentence, a paragraph, a chapter, an entire book that really doesn't resonate with others, then there's really no point to it. So, you know, there is a point where you work yourself out of the market, so to speak, if you become too insular and don't realize that no matter how much of an individual contributor role you may perceive to have, we still function in a very social group as human beings. There's always a human element somewhere.
There is, and I love what you said about you can't really work in a vacuum. I've always said that. I say this to virtual assistants and web developers that I mentor. Nature abhors a vacuum. If you just lost a client, somebody's going to come along, because now you've created that space. Just quit panicking,
yes.
You know, quit worrying about it. Just open your mind, open your heart, and invite the right person in, the right client in, and quit, you know, kind of complaining about the one that did you wrong or you did wrong. Stop. Nature abhors a vacuum. That space will fill if you quit complaining about it. Otherwise, it's going to fill with the same kind of person you just lost, which has been my experience.
Right.
So let's talk about passion and the success, because I mean, clearly you are very, very passionate about both, you know, your industry, the one that you worked in, that you became so successful in, and now your writing career. How did you translate one from the other? Because that is a big leap. Well, maybe not. Let me correct myself. Because you're working with the same set of skills, the same set of goals.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it wasn't as big a leap as I think it was.
No, and you know, it's funny. Because, you know, when you're transferring something like, you know, complete industry transfer, and not just an industry transfer within the business world, but an entire world of transfer from, you know, business to art, you would look at that and think, well, gee, what is it, a totally different passion? Or, you know, how do you readjust things and how do you make it make sense? Is art so foreign from business? And it's really not. Again, it's, you've got transferable skills. And really, at the end of the day, for me, Denise, I've always noticed, whether it's in interpersonal relationships, but especially in the business world, I can't put a fire in someone's belly. And in, you know, leadership and management roles, you quickly realize, you know, there's a variety of ways that you can motivate people. Some people are motivated by money, some people by recognition, some by work-life balance. The variety of things that people come to the office, so to speak, every day, you know, looking for. But either they have a fire in their belly or they don't. I, as a manager, could tend to it. I could stoke it. There's a lot of things I can do with those types of resources that I can allocate and investments I can make in them. But if they don't have that fire in the pit of their belly, I can't put it there. So I think in the art community, the transfer there was I had that passion you mentioned before, being an avid reader, and I just right there with you. I love to read. I've always loved to read and have always had a passion for books and words. And when you mentioned that you wanted to be an Egyptologist, that was one of the many things that I went through.
You too.
Thinking, oh, wouldn't it be great? Yeah. And, in fact,
and then I found the Amelia Peabody series some years ago. It's like, did you ever read those by Barbara Walters? She had several names. Barbara Mers.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't
read
the whole
series. Anything she wrote,
series.
I read. Loved her.
Oh, you know what? I've got to go back, though. I'm actually making a note about the Amelia Peabody series because I forgot about
Amelia
that.
Peabody.
And there's more to read. That is awesome.
I named one of my cats Emerson after her husband.
Oh,
how is that? And she wrote under Elizabeth Peters, too, which those books are phenomenal.
Oh, yes.
Did you ever read any of those?
Yes, I did. And speaking of the Egyptology, right? Yes, it's just that all of that was so much fun. And, you know, it even makes me think of Agatha Christie, Murder on the Nile, all of those different ways that we kind of touch ancient Egypt.
Right.
But just as a quick aside, that's why there is a symbol that was integrated into my book, and it's on the cover of my book, because Egyptology, hieroglyphics, symbology in general became a very interesting little passion for me as well. So I had to integrate that as well.
You know, I saw that, and I was going to ask you about that, and then I have to admit, I totally forgot to write it down, so it just kind of came up organically. So I'm so glad you addressed that. I thought, what is that all about? I actually thought maybe it was to do with maybe some of the, you know, the crimes that had taken place, but no, I get it now. So
it obviously does have to do with that, but
yeah. So you basically took something that you're very passionate about, which is writing. I have to ask you, did you do any writing prior to this? Did you write a blog? Did you write articles? Or did you just sit down and go, I'm writing a book. That's all there is to it. Book, here I come.
I had been closet writing. I mean, obviously in the business world, there's a variety of professional things that we're writing all the time. And, you know, probably the largest body of work I ever did was my master's thesis, but that's a very different type of writing than a crime thriller. But I was creative writing on my own time, in the wee hours here and there. But it was much more of a spotty enterprise because I was 100% vested in my career at that time. So that was just something that was in fits and starts on the side, little journals here, files in the computer, things of that nature.
So you were exercising your muscles. You just weren't blowing them out of proportion and standing up on stage. Okay,
exactly.
Good. So, and, you know, I think this is such an important story because so many people just say, you know, I'm kind of stuck in the corporate world, or, you know, I've had this job for 20 years and I don't want to lose that paycheck. But, you know, I'm being compelled. I'm being called to do something else. I don't know what it is. So I guess my best advice is listen to your gut.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's just an important thing to me as well that people realize, even with our corporate careers, because I really did love real estate, and I still do to a large degree. I can't go into a resort, a hotel, a high-rise building, a warehouse, you name it, without analyzing it as if I were still actively in the industry. But one of the things I think is so important as we get older is that, you know, when we look to our second act, you know, when retirement inevitably comes, it's really good to look at ourselves and say, who are we and who do we want to be in that second act? And lots of times, you know, you don't necessarily have to leap out of the career that you're in today. It's more about realizing that, you know, if you want to continue this career and run it to its inevitable conclusion, there's still always opportunities down the road. And, you know, if you've got time on the weekends or you've got time here or there, there's these other ways that you can start that process of getting yourself on the track if you're not ready to make the leap right now.
Exactly. And I work with a lot of people who are doing exactly that. They're ready to or will be ready to transition from corporate or a career into, you know, becoming an author or speaker. So I have an agency that deals with exactly that, and it's fascinating to watch people say, you know, I've done all the right things. I had a career that I love. I still have it. I'm still very passionate about it. But the day is coming where I'm going to walk away from it. But I don't want to go watch and sit on the porch and die. And, you know, they're just, that's not, basically, and I heard one of my clients say this, I figured out what I want to be when I grow up. Now, this is a man who's in his 50s. He said, I just figured out what I want to be when I grow up. And he's going to transition 5 years out of this very, very successful career that he has. And we're getting him ready. And we're building that, you know, online kind of real estate for him so that when he is ready to transition out, he just closes one door, maybe takes a couple of weeks vacation, and goes right into the next one.
Well, it's something I'm so glad to see in the evolution of really in particular in for people in the United States, because there was a time, you know, I remember even my grandparents' generation where you did that. You took the traditional job, you worked there until it was time for retirement, and then maybe you sat on the porch, and when television came along, maybe you watched some of that. But I do truly believe that a large reason why we are living longer and living better quality lives as a species is not just the fact that
we're not bored out of our skull.
Advancement. Yeah, but we're not bored out of our skull. And there's been so many studies on mental engagement and how much, you know, in terms of, you know, potential for dementia and the rest of it, that you can really push back any of those quote unquote evils of aging by staying relevant, learning, they say, creating those new neural pathways every time we learn how vital that is.
Oh, absolutely. I think I read somewhere that learning a second language or a third language as you get older can really help with your mental acuity. You know, just things like
You
think, oh, I can't do that. And I mean, I have found, because I'm a very techie person, I'm actually rebranding myself as a nerd in stilettos. I am a girl. I'm a nerd. I'm a girly. I wear stilettos. I wear long flowing, you know, maxi dresses. I am such a girly nerd. I'm not a geek. That's different. You know, I don't have lightsabers, but I'm very much a nerd. And I find, because I'm constantly delving into things that are very technical that other people just go, oh my God, are you crazy? That keeps me moving. Techie I can get, the more nerdy I can get, the happier I am. But it keeps my brain just, you know, fuzzing right along.
Absolutely. And I think there's a great sense of accomplishment when we learn something new. I'm one of those. And I will say I do have I call it my inner geek. And I try to hide it from the world, but it's in there.
Oh, no, bring it out. Bring it out to play.
Well, when I learn something new, I'll get so excited. And I'll want to go tell people about it. And this goes back to my childhood. One of the first things that I just fell in love with was words. So I'd learn some of these great words, and I'd go up to someone and say, oh, what do you think of this word or that word? And they'd just stare at me like, why do you possibly care that you learned this word and how it can be used?
So, I think we're twins. I think we might be related.
Well, you know what? We'll just have to sign up for an Egyptian hieroglyphics translation course.
There you go.
Call it good.
I was convinced. I just knew. And at one point, I was going to be a nurse, and my sister said, "You? You don't have any compassion." I do too. Damn it! You know, and off we went. But you know, that lasted, you know, until I saw my first real blood. And no, I'm done. But the Egyptology thing. I mean, I still haven't given up. I don't go outside unless it's, you know, very early in the morning or late at night, because I'm very light complected, very light skinned. The sun does not like me, and I love to be outdoors, but, you know, I can't. Egypt is not somewhere I'm going to go, but I can dream about it.
And, you know, there's just that opportunity to sneak in on a riverboat at the Great Pyramids and just arrange a private tour late at night and sneak across the sands.
Oh. Now you're talking.
What you do.
Exactly. But you know, it's funny the things that we, you know, that kind of hold over from our childhood that may not come to pass, but they still kind of motivate us, don't they? And I think if we were to just kind of go back into those early childhood dreams and those, you know, we just knew we could speak a second language. I mean, I would just, you know, gab away at people and they go, what? Oh, I'm speaking Indian. Okay. They didn't know. I don't even know what kind of Indian it was, but it was Indian. Yeah, I mean, I just knew what I was doing. It never occurred to me that I was being just as goofy as I could be, but it was fun and it felt right. And I think we tend to lose some of that just knowingness, don't we? Unless we make it a concerted effort to go back and go, you know, I'm not all dried up. I'm not dead inside. I still have dreams.
And I think that goes back to your point earlier about, you know, the dangers of complacency. And it also goes back to, you know, that idea of if you have achieved success in one arena and you feel utterly confident and people perceive you a certain way because of what you've achieved, you know, what does that mean for who you are as a person when you say, okay, well, I'm going to start out at ground zero again and start completely over? Well, to some degree, there's a risk in that. There's risk to your reputation. You can bruise your ego. You know, there's all those little things that are downsides that you can encounter along the way. But the amazing upside about it is that I remember when I graduated from college, our valedictorian was a gentleman who was 78 years old, who had gone back for his college degree. And
nice.
I was so impressed by him because I thought he had every reason, you know, he went to the traditional classes and did all of these things, you know, with all these kids who are somewhere between 18 to 24 years old, right? And what would motivate him to go in and you know, people that should be his grandchildren and that he's, you know, interrelating with in all of these ways? And, you know, how did that how did that affect his sense of self? And he was so very proud of himself in that speech that he, you know, he said, I went back and it was always something I wanted to do. And I have the time, so why not? And I've always kind of thought about myself, why not? What's the worst thing that can happen? You bruise your ego, you know, something happens along the way that somebody says something that you don't like and you think, oh, gee, but I had all this respect over here. Well, at the same time, over there, you were complacent. Over here, you're alive.
True. Right.
Now your journey just got a lot more interesting and you had the time and you used it. And I'm sure for him in many ways, and I can just relate this myself, going through my own journey, you do feel 18 again. You don't know if it's going to work out at 18. You don't know when you're picking a major or deciding on a field of interest, how that's going to work out for you. You don't have no idea if you'll be successful. The nice thing is once we get a few years under our belt, like I said, a lot of these life skills are transferable. And now you've got this whole arsenal of things, you know, to go at your next new venture with. So I just think it's absolutely imperative that we all continue to evolve and grow in whatever form makes sense for us.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, when you're talking about new ventures, like this is a fairly recent phenomenon, I think. Yeah, I've been online since 2001. I went back to college, got my computer science degree. I think I mentioned I'm a nerd. And
congratulations.
You know,
that's awesome.
Thank you. I was so proud of it. I went, oh, good. Now I refuse to work for somebody else and I went to work for myself. But
exactly.
The thing is, you know, and I wasn't. I knew I was never going to work in someone else's office. I run with scissors. I don't play with others. You know, just, it was not an option. It was an expensive degree, but I got it. It's mine, by golly. But the thing is, I've been online since then, and I've, you know, watched all the different permutations of the Internet. I mean, when I first started, my very first website had a blue background and white text. We didn't have GUI, graphical user interface. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have social media. Wasn't that long ago. And then all of these people start coming out, and they're branding themselves as, you know, huge, and some of these names are still around. You know, big marketers, Brendan Bouchard, you know, a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and not Brendan, but other people, all of a sudden, I mean, they're big in their arena. Everybody, I say everybody, me and any other nerds like me knew who they were. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. I noticed that several of them just disappeared. And I went, hang on a second, what's going on? And then about a year later, they would pop up in a completely different type of, their persona was the same, but a different business model. Some of them never made it back. It just wasn't as easy to rebrand even 10 years ago as it is now. But as I, you know, just said, I'm rebranding myself largely because two of my podcast guests said, Nerd and Stilettos, oh, you need to trademark that. And I'm like, okay. One of them was the publicist for the Academy Awards. I think he knows what he's talking about. I'll take his advice. But you know, it's just, it's easier now for us to, and I'm just using the term rebrand, but to say, you know, I've already done this. I've excelled over here. Now I'm going to go do something different. It's just, we've evolved there, you know, as people, as adults, and as a society where you don't have to be stuck at AT&T until you're, you know, 60 years old and then take the pension or whatever. I don't know what happens, but we don't have to make those decisions anymore.
Yeah, and I think it's great. I think some people's personalities truly function better in a, you know, in a more structured environment like that.
Oh,
and some
absolutely.
People, you know, they love that known, you know, they know the policies, they know how it works, they know the expectations, and maybe that's truly as well as they're doing in that industry. It's maybe not their focus. Their children are their focus, or you know, they work for a nonprofit on the side, or you know, whatever it is, so that model completely works for them and makes sense. Because they do already inherently have these other aspects that they're fulfilling within themselves. And I think that, you know, in those ways, it's a great fit for people. But I agree with you 100%. I think the fact that society is more open to these versions of ourselves, it's similar. I know you had a guest on recently, and you were talking about, you know, the generational differences that we encounter, specifically with millennials, and the fact that sometimes when you look at people's resumes,
Mark,
you know,
Miller.
They only have a few
I think
years
that was Mark
here.
Miller.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, to some degree we have generational echoing going on, but there's also this element that, you know, in our generations, you didn't want to jump around to a bunch of different jobs, but nowadays, employers, especially in Silicon Valley and different places, they don't necessarily mind it. And it's something that's become a little bit more of the norm. And people understand that employees are looking to be upwardly mobile, or that they have other reasons why they make changes. So as we have these evolving mores, even within our tolerances as a society, I think it benefits us greatly, definitely from the issue of whether it's rebranding, reinvention, however you want to perceive those elements.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think as a society, we're just more open to saying, okay, experiences are really kind of what make you, whether they're good, whether they're bad, whether they're indifferent. They do, you know, you are the sum total of your experiences. So go get experienced. You know, get as much as
Absolutely.
You can. Then bring that into the marketplace. Bring it into your life. Bring it into your relationships. You know, if you want to stay somewhere, good. That's perfect for you. But if you want to be mobile, that's, you know, that works too.
And I think knowing, as I said, you know, I think it's all about the learning. And I think if we learn, that's the way we evolve. That's the way we achieve success at the end of the day, is to learn and adapt to situations. And I think that the greatest disservice you can ever do yourself, whether it's in a relationship that you're in, or whether it's in a career, or whether it's even in your hobby, is to not learn and not pick up all these little, you know, there may be a lot of rocks in the pathways, but oftentimes there's little gems hidden under those rocks. And if you can pick up each of those gems along the way, you'll be all the richer in the end.
Absolutely. Listen, we've only got about 10 more minutes. Remember, I told you this was about the fastest hour on the web. So I want to talk about your book. So tell me, because the book is honestly, for audience, grab this book, but tell people how you came to write this and the stories about, you know, your father and your family, because this is kind of a generational thing, isn't it? I mean, you wrote it, but it was inspired very much by your family.
It is, and when we talk about, Denise, you know, the potential road's not taken. How much potential does every single human being have? What could we do? What do we do? one of those things for me was coming from what you might call a legacy. As you mentioned, my father, grandfather, and great-grandfather all served in the San Francisco Police Department, and my father actually worked undercover, so I'd hear these stories growing up. And I knew my grandfather. I didn't have the opportunity to know my great-grandfather, but I'd hear stories from my mom and different people about, you know, who these people were and some of the great stories that they would tell that would come down. And, you know, I had that opportunity. Do I go out and try to fulfill that legacy? And there was a time when I was kicking around the idea. I said, gee, well, I've got a master's degree in finance. I could always go in and apply to the FBI with that. But I eventually decided, no, if I get a paper cut, it's a drama. So I wasn't sure that it was the right thing for me. And so I decided that in many ways, this opportunity to write, which was always a passion that I actually got from my mom based on that love of reading, that I didn't have to sign up. I could kind of write up into the legacy, and that would be my way of kind of keeping it going. So it was something in the back of my head. Was I ever going to have anything to do with law enforcement? And so this is my way of kind of bridging both elements of my family background together. So it was a really great opportunity from that standpoint. And as I said, I was always writing on the side. It was always the dream in the back of my mind. And one day it was just everything kind of came together and I said, it's time to try. And I set those goals very small and very bite-sized and put in a lot of work. And at the end of the day, I have a novel that I've been very, very blessed to have some very, very kind reviews on and very nice feedback on.
I'm going to leave a review as soon as I quit reading it. My sisters are, where's the book? I'm reading it. You should see. When she gets it, you know, she's thinking she's going to get a pristine book. She's not. It's got stink tabs in it. It's got underlining. Yeah.
Okay.
And I may ask for it back. Version. I don't know. Actually, what I may do is just, you know, send her own darn copy so I get to keep mine. But, you know.
Then you won't have to hear the color commentary. Why'd you underline that
That's
part?
That's right. It's like, hang on a second. Why is this interesting? I can hear it now. Why is this interesting to you? That doesn't even make sense. This is interesting. Now siblings are. You know, we're going to argue. Okay, so I want to ask you, too, about your goals because I kind of want to get a sense of how you kind of structured this. But then my question after that is going to be, did you do interviews with your family? So let's start with your goals. Did you just kind of sit down, you know, maybe in the mornings and write? Did you set a structured time? How did you work this out in your head to where you were going to set these bite-sized goals and then achieve them?
Again, very transferable skills from my corporate life. Discipline at the forefront. If we're going to get there, then we got to put in the work to get there. So a big part of it was setting aside time with mini goals per day for how much I would produce on a daily basis. There were also goals around learning what the publishing industry is about and what the expectations were and what ultimately it would look like at the end of the day to be a writer to determine, do I even really want to be one? Even though I think
right.
I do, is that right. The reality of what I want? So a lot of time, not just spent researching, obviously there's a lot of technical issues in the book that took inordinate amounts of time, but my little geek enjoyed it. But also the time researching, going to writers' conferences, networking, meeting people, learning so much just about that whole business side of writing.
And there is a business side to writing. I think a lot of people think, okay, I've got to get, you know, I have to get with a publishing house, or am I going to self-publish? Do I put it on Kindle? Do I put it on CreateSpace? You know, who does my cover? Who are my editors? How many editors do I need? I mean, there's a lot to learn. You can't just write a manuscript and go, oh, good, I'm done. I mean, that's not even
absolutely
close to the case.
Absolutely not. Yes, and I think so many people go into it with that expectation that, oh, I'm just going to write this book and it's going to fly off the shelves and it's going to magically become a book, first of all, and then it's going to fly off the shelves.
And it doesn't work like that at all. There's so many steps and so many people involved and you know, you have to have a publishing house unless you self-publish. And, you know, in this, like, I'm in the middle of writing a book with one of my business partners, and I'm terrified. I'm not often scared of anything, but right now I'm like, really? You want me to do what? It's like, so I whine and cry.
Well, I feel your pain.
It's a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. It's very rewarding at the end of the day.
I'm feeling very much like a little brat right now. I don't want to do this. It's terrible.
I understand. Believe me.
Okay. So it's not just me being a little brat then.
No, God bless all the people out there who say, oh, this is, you know, everything I've ever succeeded at, I loved every minute of it. Because I'm a big believer that passion, that fire I talked about that burns in your belly, it's not always pretty. And,
no.
You know, again, other people who truly enjoy every moment of the pain and the angst, and they don't even see it as pain and angst, they just love it all. I tend to be, remember the paper cut reference? Yeah, I tend to kind of whine a little bit in my milk, but I still have the discipline to get through and get it done. So,
you just described me. I've got a friend right now. Her husband is going through a lot of chemotherapy. He's got a pretty nasty form of cancer. He goes to work. He gets on planes. He does whatever he needs to do. And I'm like, I'm so shamed sometimes because if I hit my elbow on the wall as I'm going past, I'm like, and I stop it. I have a little mini fit and get it out of my system. And then I go, oh, Denise, really? That's the worst of your troubles. So no, I totally
but
get
I do
it.
Think
okay,
that's
but
sorry
well,
about
and,
that.
You know, she told me the other day, she said, just because we were talking about this, I said, you know, I'm not a big, big drama queen, but every once in a while I have a little high chair fit. Why not? You know, we all need them. And I live alone. I can do it. I'm not affecting anybody but me, so I just have my little high chair pit throw my bees across the room. And, you know, then I start laughing at myself and move on. But I said, you know, then I look at people, you know, and I have a friend that just lost her husband last night. Yeah, I look at people who are having
goodness.
These terrible, terrible situations, and I try to smack myself, Denise, you got it so good, you got it so good. But and she kind of brought me back to reality. She said, Denise, if you're feeling it, it's valid. Don't try to walk away from very valid feelings. You don't need to wallow in it, but don't discount it. And I thought that was the smartest thing I'd heard in a long time.
And I think at the end of the day, Denise, again, it's what makes one person successful and the other person fail to ever achieve that success. And I really truly believe that it's about determination and that discipline at the end of the day. If you have the passion, determination, and discipline, even if it's not pretty, even if you get frustrated or whatever it is, and oh, this one element of it, I just hate doing this one element and whatever it is, as long as you push through it, it really doesn't matter. You know, some of the greatest athletes in the world, there's certain elements of their workout routine that they absolutely despise, but they still push through it and they get it done at the end of the day. So, you know, as long as you can push through, that's really all that matters in the end. And again, part of the journey is the color that we encounter along the way.
Good way to put it. Well, I wanted to ask you, Tim, we've got a couple minutes left. Did you have the opportunity to, you know, talk with your family, to kind of interview your family for some of these stories in the book or, you know, for some of the inspiration in the book?
Absolutely. And there were always, you know, as I said, growing up, there were stories that were age appropriate. You know, Dad made sure that certain stories you didn't get to hear until you were over 18. But one of
the
important things. Yeah, and one of the really important things that I wanted to convey in this book was the fact that, you know, sometimes in Hollywood or the television world, when we look at law enforcement folks and we have images of them, one of the most important things I wanted to convey was the toll that work takes on the individuals who do it, whether it's people you talked about, one of your potential vocations being nursing. You know, I just have so much respect for these people who sacrifice personally so much to help other people. And that was something important that did come through from the family stories that, you know, these are people at the end of the day and they're not robots. And there's a cost to doing that work. And it's important work. It benefits society. But there is a cost to it. So I wanted to explore that in the book.
And I'm so glad you brought that up because, and it hasn't been happening recently, but, you know, policemen on duty being shot for no reason. What in the world is wrong with people? I mean, seriously, what is wrong with people that they think that's okay in any universe? It's just, it's sick.
Yeah, I think it's a situation that's so complex in our society that, you know, I'm a large believer that there's really no reason, unless your life is in jeopardy, to ever take anyone else's life. And even if your life is in jeopardy, I think you'd have to clearly look at, you know, all the factors to make sure your life is in jeopardy. But, you know, a lot of violence that goes on in general in our society and a lot of the ills of society, I think, become so complex. And at the end of the day, if we can start to unravel them and just look at things as simple as how do you change career paths, use transferable skills, how do we all relate to each other across different demographic boundaries, across age, all these different things. Just think about, you know, kind of that golden rule of treat others as you'd want to be treated kind of thing. And, you know, I guess a lot of it is about simplicity at the end of the day, whether it's how do we become successful or how do we live with our neighbor. We just have to simplify more, I think, in the way that we think.
Absolutely. Marie, thank you so much for being with me today. I mean, it's been fascinating chatting with you, and I love that you shared your business wisdom and your goals, and I wish you much success today and every single day. And for our audience, thank you for listening. As always, our hour went way too fast, and, you know, everything is just, I'm almost speechless about this because, I mean, this has been a very important interview. But anyway, I really hope everybody will download this, listen to it several times, grab her book. Maria, I didn't get a chance to ask you where people can get the book.
They can get it through all major retailers. They can get it in any format, whether they want it in paper, Kindle, iBooks, Nook. For ease, if they don't want to do Amazon or Barnes & Noble, they can also go to my website, which is mariesutro.com, and the name of the book is Dark Associations.
Great. Well, today's episode was sponsored by my company, Your Office on the Web. If you are looking for full-on business creation services such as web development, virtual assistants, online business management, social media marketing, and so much more, please visit me at yourofficeontheweb.com. And be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Marie Sutro, and take us along on your success journey. Marie, thank you.
Thank you, Denise. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.